ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 440, is Mahamakha. Makha is a word which is a synonym of yagya, which is generally translated into English as sacrifice. And Maha is a very well-known term, which means great. So all sacrifice, Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the meaning of, so it literally means great sacrifice. Baladev Vidyabhushan translates this as that all great sacrifices, great Vedic sacrifices are meant for his satisfaction. So sacrifices, there may be just some very small sacrifice that a householder performs at home. Traditional Vedic Brahmanas, they will perform daily sacrifices, yagya in their home, 3 times a day. It's small scale. Then there may be very great sacrifices also, such as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Rajasuya sacrifice that was performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. That's about as big a sacrifice as you can get, where that is to offer everything to Vishnu, having become the king of the whole world and being able to offer everything to Vishnu. When we say offer everything to Vishnu, that means whatever we have, sarvasvam Vishnave dattva. This Shukracharya said to Bali Maharaj, he had the whole universe. Sarvasvam Vishnave dattva. And what's the next line? Mudho, I can't remember exactly. Vatishyate katam. How will you, great fool, be able to live? So to offer everything, that generally that means atma samarpan, to offer oneself. But if one is very opulent, then he can offer many great things to Krishna. Perform a great sacrifice means public sacrifice. Kings, a major role of kings in Vedic sacrifices is to be the yajaman or the inaugurator of a sacrifice which is performed by the yagyiks, the brahmanas. But the king, he becomes the one who inaugurates or calls for the sacrifice to be formed, and he collects from the Vaishyas, all the grains, ghee, and he himself accumulates so much gold and so many things by his dominance, and he offers this all. Grains and ghee are offered into the fire, and then cows and gold and all these items. Land is offered to the brahmanas. Everyone is fed. There may be animals or an animal sacrificed also, and it's the accumulated endeavors of the whole society, what they've produced. The Vaishyas are the producers, but they require to be advised by the Brahmanas, protected by the Kshatriyas, and assisted by the Shudras. So all that, everyone together produces. And that's also produced by the grace of Vishnu, and it's offered back to him. Not all of it. It's not that all the grains and all the ghee in the kingdom are offered. It's some has to be kept for eating also after offering in sacrifice. But that idea is there. We'll find in the Western world also. They have the harvest in the autumn in England, I remember there's a harvest festival or something like that. I can't remember exactly the name. And in America, it's still a very, very big festival, Thanksgiving. That was actually not originally a Christian festival. It was adopted from what they call pagan. Prior to the Christians in Europe, they're what they call pagans, who were, we could say, retrograde Hindus. They were, we understand from Mahabharata that Parashuram chased Kshatriyas out of India, so they went to other parts of the world, and they were going on with the Vedic ways, more or less. So they were called pagans by the Christians, but they adopted many of their festivals, because people have a habit. It's just like in India, we see people convert to Christians, but they still like to perform Diwali and things like that because they're just so used to doing it. And now there's Muharram, the Muslims are doing, and the Hindus will join in also, around here at least. Not whipping themselves, but they'll join in the general festivities. So the Christians, they adopted these festivals and just Christianized them. Christmas is another one, by the way. It's the birthday of Jesus. Historically, there's no idea when the actual day of the birth of Jesus was, and it appears almost certain that they got the year wrong. So it's supposed to be now 2015, but it actually should. It's about 2019 years after Jesus was born, according to the majority opinion among scholars. They don't really know. Anyway, what I'm getting the point is that there's a system of sacrificing to gods, or to ultimately to the Supreme Lord, recognizing that it is by His grace that we're able to produce all the things that we need for our physical sustenance. So big public festivals are to celebrate that, and also to request the Lord that we recognize it is by your grace that we are able to have all these grains and ghee and so many items. So the idea is that we're pleasing Him with this sacrifice, and then He will be pleased to keep on bestowing. Whereas if you don't give it to Him, He may become angry, if you don't recognize Him. Sahayagya praja shishva puruvacha prajapatihi. What's the next line? Anena prasavishadvam eshavo svishta karma duk. So at the beginning of the creation, the Supreme Lord, He brought forth all living beings with the process of sacrifice and said, you can be happy by this sacrifice, by performing these sacrifices. So this sacrifice is meant to be offered to Vishnu, which is a very important point, because it's often thought that, well, we'll perform different sacrifices for different demigods, as we find in Vrindavan, when Krishna was present there. His father, who was the king, so to speak, of the local cowherders, was organizing a yagya for the satisfaction of Indra. But actually, all sacrifices are meant for, ultimately, for the satisfaction of Vishnu. I say Vishnu here particularly, not Krishna, because it is Krishna who is Vishnu, but His aspect of Vishnu is concerned with the maintenance of the universal order. Krishna doesn't directly get involved in that. Even Vishnu is fairly aloof. He's not as involved as Brahma or Shiva, but He's involved with the maintenance of the universe. So yagya is to be offered to Him. In this Kali Yuga, of course, the only yagya is chanting the holy names of Krishna, which is a different kind of yagya altogether. It performs the function of all sacrifice, which can't be performed properly in this modern age for various reasons. There are no pious kings, there are no pious brahmanas. People, if they can get a little something to eat, they're happy. They're not going to throw grains in the fire. Yagyas have to be performed in a purified place. There's no purified place. The whole land is contaminated. If there's one cow killed in the whole of the land of India, the whole land is polluted by that extreme sin. But hundreds of thousands being killed all the time. So that kind of sacrifice can't be performed. So the Harinama Sankirtan, this sacrifice, yagya, it's not a sacrifice of goods per se, but it's means that we want to sacrifice ourselves in the service of Krishna, going directly to Krishna, asking for his mercy, to be engaged in his service. So it takes the place of all other kinds of yagyas. This yagya, sahayagya praja shrishtva, actually the Purusha Sukta of that describes how from the Purusha, it literally means a prayer to the person or the Supreme Person. So that describes how the Supreme Lord manifests himself as the ingredients of the universe, and those ingredients are to be offered back to him. He himself is the great sacrificer in Treta Yuga, the process of Dharma, the Yuga Dharma, is offering sacrifices. And Bhagavan Sri Ram wasn't the first one to do that, of course, but he exemplified that process by, it's described in the last part of Ramayana, the action story. Once the main action is over, then it's described how Ram, residing in Ayodhya, stayed there for many thousands of years and offered many, many sacrifices, one after the other, public sacrifices. So he exemplified this process of performing great sacrifices. The next name is Nakshatra Nemihi. The Nakshatra is generally understood to mean star, but it can mean a constellation of stars also. So Nemi means the that which supports the wheel. So the if the stars are seen as a great mandal, a great wheel in the sky, because they all it's as if they turn. If you see the night stars, they all move, but they all seem to move not exactly together, but quite much like that. From our perspective, we can't really understand much, but the stars, they from our perspective, they seem to move. And actually they do move, but not in exactly from our... Well, it depends where you are in the universe, where exactly how they're moving. But what makes the stars move? Now, the modern scientists, they'll give various theories that the interstellar gravitational forces. There's a lot of problems with that theory, because there's not, according to their theory, mass, great masses cause other great masses to move, or even small masses to move. But there's not enough matter in the universe to produce all the gravity. There's not enough visible matter in the universe to produce all the gravity that's required to make everything move. In fact, you need a lot more than can be seen. So, therefore, the scientific theory is that 98% of the universe is made of dark matter, which can't be seen, touched, smelled, tasted, or any such thing, but it must be there because otherwise our theories don't work. Well, maybe. It's not impossible. But even if we describe that the stars are moving and someone's head is moving, or the birds are flying in the sky, and we can explain it all according to physical processes. Something went blip in my brain, and therefore I subconsciously thought of moving my head, and various impulses came down the nerves, and I moved my head. So we can explain it all. I move my head means the various cells within the muscles and the ligaments, they acted in such a way. I mean, you could get into an extremely detailed explanation of what happens when someone, for instance, picks their nose. You could get into an extremely detailed explanation of what goes on at the physical level. You feel some itching in your nose, sends a signal here, and then something goes on in here in the brain and sends another message back to the finger, and then all the bones and everything moves up here, and you put your finger in your nose and pick it and flip it out, something like that. So you could it could be explained, you could write a thick book describing all the physical processes that go on. And the ability of the scientist to do so has convinced some of them, most of them it seems, that now we've explained it all physically. So there's no need of having any soul or God, because we know it's all these physical forces. But where does volition come from? Volition here in the sense of volition means movement. But where does the desire come from? Or as one professor based in New York City, whose name I just don't remember, name David something, he says, his point is that, well, who or what experiences? What is experiencing? It's easy to say that all the different processes went on within the body, but who actually experiences? And he gives the example that you could theoretically you could produce a zombie by assembling all different materials, and it would act like a human, but it wouldn't experience like a human. David Chalmers, that's his name. So I wrote to him actually and said, well, why don't you consider the explanation in the Vedas? But he said, he actually replied also. But he's not interested. They want to, somehow they want to find something, some material explanation. A very good explanation is that separate from matter, there's a different kind of energy altogether that experiences. So the supreme experiencer, and even if we experience, even if we say, well, I as a conscious living being subconsciously sent the message, but who oversees, who orchestrates all of this? And actually, just like I'm moving my hand here, I just became aware of that, but I didn't consciously think, let me lift up my hand and move it. It was a subconscious desire manifested as the movement of this hand. So when we don't even directly think, breathing is another, there's so many examples. When we breathe, we don't think, okay, nose, breathe in. Okay, breathe out, and down there in the lungs, take in that oxygen and send out some carbon dioxide, which are told at school. I presume it's still true, according to the scientists, that we breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide, although it's more likely that we breathe in carbon monoxide and then just die, the way things are going. But we don't consciously think, well, how does that work? Well, the answer is that there is this supreme controller who orchestrates all of this. And he orchestrates the movement of the stars also. So even though we can explain the movements of the stars in terms of physical processes, although it seems that the astrophysicists are not really doing that good a job of explaining it, but fortunately for them, most people can't understand that they're not doing a good job, because the common man doesn't understand anything about it. So they can say whatever they like and people believe it. But even if they explain this happens, that happens, supernova explodes and so on and so on, collapses, becomes a black hole and so on and so on. But the important point to understand in all this is that there is conscious, powerful, living person behind all of this. It's not just some cosmic happening for no reason. It's going on under the supervision of Krishna. These boys, they chant the Brahma Sanghita. Is it? Can they give a verse describing Krishna's overseeing the universe? There are two, actually. One describes the sun. Any of the boys, they can say? Yaj chakshuresha savita sakala graharnam raja samasta sura murti rashesha teja yas yagya brahmati sambhrita kala chakra govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. So here it's mentioned sakala grahanam, all the graha, which can loosely be understood to mean nakshatra. It is not exactly the same meaning, but for the purposes of this verse, we can take it to mean stars. So the sun is just like the king of all the stars and planets, and the sun is so mighty, but it's just like the eye of the Supreme Lord, but it moves according to His order, which means the stars also move according to His order, on the wheel of time. Then another verse I thought about concerning the condition of the universe is Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagadanda Koti Kotish Vatresha Vasudhadi Vibhuti Bhinnam Tad Brahma Nishkalam Anantam Ashesh Bhutam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. That there are unlimited universes, and he invests them all with energy. There are various situations within the universe, different planets, and they all have their own particular situations. They're all going on under the order of Krishna. So this is an important point to understand. When we look at the sky at night, we can see millions of stars. If we are further away from Hyderabad, we'd see even more. The refraction of light from Hyderabad interferes with that, but still, especially on the night of Amavasya, the new moon night, you can see so many stars. in the sky at night. They're all going, how is that? How are they all going on? They're all going on under the direction of Krishna. The few verses we've been discussing in the last few days, many of the commentators, they make reference to the Shishuma Chakra. So Shankara, in his commentary on this name, Nakshatra naming, says he's the center of the Shishumara constellation. And he's the one who supports it. So he's like the center of the wheel, the nave of the wheel, so he supports everything and makes it all move like that. Then the next name is a similar name, Nakshatri. So this name can be understood just like we have the word Deha and Dehi. There's the body and the owner of the body, or the active principle in the body. Shariri. Kshetra, Kshetri. There's a field and the owner of the field, or the active principle of the field. So they're all the stars, and he is the owner of the stars, or the principle by which the stars are the stars. There's no meaning to a body without a soul. So similarly, there's no meaning to the stars without that which make them stars. It lends their starness. He's the superstar, you could say. That word's used in a different way nowadays. But he's the... Oh, that's probably why they use that term supernova instead of superstar, so as not to get confused with these silly people who jump around on TV. So it means, yeah, he who is the very life of all the stars and planets, he's the driving force behind it. Shankara gives the meaning that this refers to him being the moon, as he states in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Vibhuti Yoga chapter, that Nakshatranam Aham Shashi, among the stars, I am the moon. Of course, when we say star, that word, that English word, has undergone a change of connotation according to the change of understanding of it that has taken place in the Western world. Formerly, it was just something you see in the sky. But now, the idea of a star, there's a specific scientific definition, although there may be, of what a star is. So there may be differences of opinion, but we understand it according to... We tend to understand it nowadays according to scientific criteria. Whatever it may be. He is the ruler of all the stars and the planets. The word nakshatra might not exactly correspond to what the scientists call a star, and certainly the term graha would not be accepted at all by the scientists. Graha means that which captures. So the grahas, they appear to have an influence on people and events. This is understood in the science of astrology. So the next name is Kshama. There's a well-known term, Kshama, the female form, which means great tolerance, patience, tolerance especially. But this is Kshama, the male form. And Baladev Vidyabhushan, he gives the meaning of this, he who controls the planetary movement. So it's similar to the names prior to this, but other meanings are one who has great patience, or one who is very competent and efficient. So certainly Krishna is the most competent and efficient. From our perspective, we see this massive universe. We try to work it out, how it's all working. We can't understand how it's working, but Krishna is very competent in setting up the whole universe. The scientists think themselves to be very competent if they can explain a little about how it works according to their perspective. But Krishna not only obviously knows how it all works, but he is the one who sets it all in motion. And great patience, tolerance. Well, why patience? Because so many, all the living beings in the universe, they have forgotten Krishna, they've turned away from Krishna. Krishna sets up this universe to give different living beings the chance to play act, imagine themselves to be the supreme controller. But that's not possible, so therefore great illusion is required. That great illusion is required, that Maya is required, so they can play their game of being the Supreme Lord. Ishvaroham aham bhogi. So they can they try to understand something about this universe, but they can't understand. Actually, we really can't understand this universe unless we understand the purpose behind it, Krishna behind it. He also gives an opportunity within this universe for those who are within the illusion of trying to enjoy it, for them to come out of that illusion and come to him. But most of them don't. Most of the living beings, they're not interested. They don't try to come to Krishna. They don't try to become purified. And Krishna goes on giving them opportunities. He tolerates. Doesn't mean he's... There's an idea of tolerance. The idea of tolerance that we just let anyone do whatever they like. But that's not a very good standard of tolerance. Tolerance should be mitigated or balanced with acting in a manner that is for the benefit of others. If you just tolerate and let people do whatever they like, that will not be for their benefit. There has to be some discipline, which means punishment if required. So Krishna lets a lot of nonsense go on, but he also punishes those who are particularly sinful, but for their benefit. But he doesn't run out of patience. He keeps on giving them opportunities. This is very important to understand in comparison with the Christian or Islamic view of God, of someone who is so impatient that in one lifetime, if somehow or other, even if they never heard of Jesus, then they have to go to hell forever because they didn't worship him. Or if they did hear of Jesus, but they didn't worship him in the way that some particular church says they should worship him, then they have to go to hell forever. But Krishna is a much better person than this God who's, we're told, throws people into hell to burn forever. Krishna's much better than that. He has patience. Especially he's patient with his devotees, those who truly aspire for him. Even if they do something wrong, apichet sudaracharo bhajate maam ananya bhak Sadhureva samantavya samyagviva sitohi saha. Even if someone does something wrong, devotee who's fully fixed on surrendering to Krishna, in Krishna, he tolerates and he says, all right, they're still a devotee. So be as I tolerate, others should also tolerate. Because kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Quickly he will come to the proper position of being fully situated. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that a little differently, or somewhat differently. But the idea is that Krishna is so, he's so very tolerant of those who are coming to him. They're in a different category to those who are avoiding him. So he's very tolerant of their mistakes. Mistakes means even in bhakti they may be up and down. Sometimes they're very enthusiastic, sometimes not very enthusiastic. Krishna encourages them. He doesn't reject them because they're not in... They have ups and... When they go down, he doesn't kick them down further. He tries to help them to come up. So Krishna, he's very tolerant. The name is there. He is the life of all the stars. He makes the stars move. So that must require a lot of strength. In Western mythology, there's a picture of one god called Atlas carrying the earth with great difficulty. The heavy weight of the earth carries the whole earth. But Krishna, one of his names in here in Vishnu Sahasranam is Mahidhar, he who holds the whole earth. But he doesn't feel, it's not that he's suffering from the strain of somebody has to put it down and wipe his forehead and take a cup of coffee to get some energy back. It's not like that. For him it's very easy. He can hold all the planets. He's not strained by doing so. So his patience in bearing everything is not that he's physically strained, but that he's a person and he has feelings. But even though he is hurt when people reject him, and how much is he rejected? And if someone calls us a bad name or says bad things about us or ignores us, we become so upset. But Krishna, the people are blaspheming him, ignoring him, saying he doesn't exist. And still Krishna tolerates. Very, very tolerant. He doesn't zap them into non-existence, which he could do, of course. So we don't find any instance of Krishna. There's so many demons attacking. Then it becomes difficult for him to meet with Radha. We don't find that he becomes grumbling, complaining, morose, depressed, finding faults with others, blaming others. He doesn't become irritated. He's not in that lower stage of consciousness. As we may be. If things go wrong for us, we grumble, we complain, we get in anxiety. Of course, we can say that Krishna's in control of everything, so he can just put things right as he likes, whereas we can't. But we can also learn to tolerate various situations that we're in. Of course, we shouldn't tolerate everything. There's all these qualities, we have to know how to properly apply them also. For instance, if I have some sickness, then at some level, some minor sickness we can tolerate, but other sickness we should get treatment. We shouldn't just tolerate. You may think, it seems like I've got cancer, so I'll just tolerate it. Well, then you'll die fairly soon. So if someone wants to remain in this body longer so that they can practice Krishna consciousness this more and preach to others, and they may get the cancer treated and not just tolerated. There may come a point where it's beyond treatment, and then you just have to tolerate it. What else can you do? You can take inspiration from Krishna, this quality of tolerance amid Krishna, although he is complete and perfect, he puts himself in the situation of a human being. Which means that some people will be against him, some people will be for him. He kills demons, no doubt. He gave Shishupal 100 chances before he killed him. So tolerance is balanced with intolerance that is necessary sometimes. That's, he comes to destroy the demons. So we may say, well, that's very intolerant. Well, he lets them go on for quite some time before he just gives them a chance to become better. But eventually, there's a time for tolerance and there's a time for intolerance also. So one of the meanings is competent and efficient. Someone can actually be very competent and efficient if they're patient also, because it's not that just you snap your fingers and then everything is done. But to organize a state or a family or an ashram or even one's own life, one has to have patience also. Because the very nature of this world is that everything won't go right all the time. Most of the time things don't go as we would wish them to. But still, if we are to achieve anything in this world, we have to have patience to overcome obstacles also. And Krishna also, acting as if an ordinary human being, possesses patience, waits for the right time to do everything. In the beginning of the Ramayana, the outstanding transcendental qualities of Lord Rama are described, and one of them is described Kshamaya Prithivi Samaha. So this quality of Kshama or tolerance is described about Lord Rama. He's just like the earth in tolerance. The earth is very, very tolerant, even though we mistreat her in so many ways. She's very tolerant. So Hare Krishna, I'll finish there just for now. Is there any question, please, or comment? The internal, this, what is that? Mama prapya aiva kaunteya. Tato ya tyadamam gatim. Krishna says, I send them into the lower species. They don't attain me. Those who are very demoniac. Tanahaṁ dushitakurang saṁsāreṣu narādhama. Those who are very bad, hating, who have a hating nature, who are cruel, Krishna says, I throw them down into the lower species. They don't attain me. Srila Prabhupada in one place comments that Krishna becomes angry. He also explains that although Krishna becomes so angry at the demons for being so bad, they have this attitude of hatred and cruelty. But even the devotees maybe they manifest the mercy of Krishna even more. And they can and Krishna sometimes he kills such demons and gives them liberation. Or even in the demon, if there's some slight trace of bhakti, even if it's perverse, he takes that and accepts that, as in the case of Putana. she had some motive in a previous life, some motive of affection toward Vamanadeva. That was just like ordinary, mundane, motherly love, but she felt it toward Vamandev, and Vamandev noted that. So in the next life she came as Putana and very badly wanted to kill, a very bad motive to want to kill Krishna and to kill so many children. But Krishna took out her life and in this way mitigated all her offenses by himself personally killing her. And then he gave her the reward of her good intention by giving her the position of a mother. Dhatruchitam, I mean, the word uchit means which is fitting, which suggests she wasn't fit for it, but Krishna gave that to her. So Krishna, inherently, he doesn't hate anyone. But ye yatha mang prapadyante, tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. He reciprocates. He reciprocates with others as they reciprocate with him, but still, even though that's a general truth, but there's also the factor of Krishna's mercy, that Krishna, he is very kind. So we can't really reciprocate with him fully. He says that, but actually his giving to us is more than we can give to him. Unless we're very advanced. As in the case of the gopis. All right then, Hare Krishna. Another question? Yeah.
There are yajnas like Ashwamedha and Gomedha. Animals are sacrificed.
Yeah.
And after sacrificing, they are taking it as prasad. The description is there in many places in Ramayana, like Dasharatha and Kaushalya. And how can we understand that Vaishnavas eat?
How can we understand that Vaishnavas eat meat? Well, there are some that eating the meat offered in the sacrifice. Well, there are some scholars who interpret this somehow or other to mean that they don't eat meat. I believe some Arya Samajis or someone translated like that. How do we understand that Vaishnavas eat meat? Well, they may do. They may do. Said Garuda regularly eats, he doesn't eat anything else except meat. Jatayu is also a Vaishnav who's a meat eater. Generally, in the spiritual world, there's no meat eating. There may be in this world. There may be no personal desire to do so, but they may do to honor the process of sacrifice. We don't find in Shastra anywhere that the Vaishnavas describing a relish for eating meat. Kshatriyas may do. They may drink wine, they may have sex. And Sri Prabhupada wrote in one purport that Kshatriyas, under allowance, they're allowed to break all the four principles. Drinking wine means not exactly, but this soma rasa. They're allowed to, not only allowed to, but they're supposed to at a certain point. So that's allowed for them. And those who are on a higher level, who are taking the role of a kshatriya, if we say how can a vaisha like Dasharath eat meat? Well, his real identity is as a Vaishnava, but in this world he's acting as a Kshatriya. So he may act as a Kshatriya for the benefit of others to show lower type, or non-Vaishnav Kshatriyas, or not those who are not very advanced, that they can do this. Otherwise, that's allowed. Meat eating is required under certain circumstances. So, if we bring in the idea that meat eating is not allowed under any circumstances, then we will get meat eating outside the Vedic regulations, because some people are going to eat meat. So it's better that they do so within the Vedic regulations. And regulations mean they'll be regulated. They won't do it all the time. So some Vaishnavas, they may do this to set an example for others. If they say, well, if we try to stop all meat eating, then it'll actually produce a more sinful situation. So better than stopping all meat eating is to allow it under... Of course, if everyone becomes so purified that they don't want to eat meat, then that's better, but that's not very likely. There's one conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Patel, the famous conversations, it's recorded, in which Dr. Patel is praising the Swaminarayan Sampradaya because they stop, they're against meat eating. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, meat eating is allowed in the Vedas. And then Dr. Patel says, then I reject the Vedas. And then Prabhupada said, then you become an atheist. It is allowed in Srila Prabhupada said that if people want to eat beef, we will supply. We will give you cow's meat to eat. But how? You let the cow die and then you take that meat. So that's realistic. The Vedic injunctions are realistic. If everyone can become a Vaishnava, all well and good. But it's not very likely. In the meantime, we have to deal with people's propensities. Srila Prabhupada commented how this prohibition in India was a failure, because even in Gujarat there's supposed to be no alcohol on sale, and no alcohol on sale, and alcohol's everywhere. In Andhra one time there was also, it was when this was all part of Andhra Pradesh, which probably in one generation people will have forgotten that altogether, but there was prohibition for some time. And there was more alcohol being drunk than when it was allowed. Because it's an easy thing to do, to set up in your home some fermentation and distillation, and then you sell it. And probably the first customers will be the police. So how are you going to stop that? Customers means that you have to give it to them free, and then you sell it to others. Once I was at this Gokul Dham, this farm project near Belgaum. We were just driving away out of that, and the road is very narrow, so there was some vehicle coming the other way. So we went to one side, and the vehicle just came slowly, slowly. And the man there, he was obviously had something for sale. So I said, "Kya bechte? What are you selling?" He said, "Sharab." Alcohol. I'm translating for those who may not understand. So then I asked him, "Nyay ya anyay? Legal or illegal?" And he said, "Well, you know, I have to support my family." And he said, "It's not mine anyway. I'm not the malik. I'm just the deliverer. I'm not the..." So, you know, there's a whole big tempo of alcohol, illegal alcohol. He's going village to village selling it, probably got contracts. It goes on. So Prabhupada commented that the prohibition doesn't work because people have, they want it. And that's one of the arguments for, see, America has this, the United States of America for years has been having this fictional war on drugs. I mean, they make a show of having a war on drugs. They say that they can Even 30 years ago, they said from space, if a coin falls on the street in Moscow, they can read the writing on it. They said that their cameras are so precise, they can see from space. And they can't see shiploads and plane loads of drugs coming in to the country all the time. So they want to go into other countries and spray the fields and destroy all the coca plants which make cocaine and this. But the other countries are saying, well, it's your people who are buying it, so don't blame our people if we're producing it. You tell your people not to buy it. The problem begins with you, not with us. If there's no demand, then we wouldn't grow it for supply. So Srila Prabhupada made the point that you can forbid it, but people have a taste, they want it. So legal or illegal, it will go on. And in fact, that's an argument. There's a whole lobby in the Western countries for legalizing drugs like these marijuana. It means in this country it's called ganja, bhang. Especially that. And then even psychotropic drugs like LSD, cocaine, crack, ecstasy. They say, well, prohibition or making it illegal doesn't work. Just like during the 1920s in America, alcohol was illegal. And the famous gangster Al Capone, he organized production and of alcohol. And it increased, there were gangs selling it and fighting each other. And the gangs would control whole areas of cities. And the same thing, this is the argument, the same thing's going on now. That these drugs are produced and sold by gangsters. And the police, the attention, we're spending millions of dollars every year for the police to try to catch these people. We can't stop it. It's been going on for years. We sometimes catch, of course, heroin and its poppy seeds and its derivatives. So we can't stop it, so we should legalize it, and that way we can control it and even make a profit out of it, as they do with alcohol. We can ensure proper quality so it's not mixed up with some poison. Sometimes this LSD, that was a popular drug when I was in my teens, that was sometimes, it was made in such a way it would get mixed with strychnine, which is rat poison. And is a heavy poison, so people often. So we can ensure quality control. We can tax it, and we'll take it out of the hands of the bootleggers, of those who produce it illegally. And this way, it will help to control the whole situation. Otherwise, it's producing gangsterism. So anyway, I'm just saying all this because Prabhupada also made that point. So I'm just elaborating on it. That we can't, because people have these propensities. That's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. What is that? Vyavasa, Surapan, there's Dyutam, yeah, there are two verses actually. I was thinking of another one. Dyutam Panam Striyasuna, there's the easy one. Gambling, meat eating, intoxication, and illicit sex. People have these propensities. So they can be indulged in according to Vedic processes. Those who are on a higher level, they don't indulge in them at all. Those who are on a less high level, they indulge in them according to the Vedic injunctions. And those who are lower, they just indulge in it, not according to the Vedic injunctions. So those who are on a higher level, they may sometimes... apparently follow the lower path, or to save people from the lowest path. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.